Welcome to the Let's Go Eat Show. I should tell you, in this episode of the Let's Go Eat Show, we don't eat anything. We don't have any food anywhere in sight. We just recorded this episode of the podcast in a podcast broadcast booth at Broadway Media. Our guest on the Let's Go Eat Show, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. He is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Utah, and I've kind of gotten to know him a little bit over the last couple of 3 years, and, he's a good guy. He's a Republican, and he's way too conservative for me, but he's a good guy, and he's willing to talk about things and consider other viewpoints. As the Lieutenant Governor, he's the Chief Election Officer of the state of Utah, and we talk about whether there was Russian meddling in the election process in Utah, because he's the guy who had to investigate that. I think he'll be interested in what he has to say about that. We talk about how he got to be the lieutenant governor, how he views politics today. He's an interesting fellow. Spencer J. Cox on this episode of the Let's Go Eat Show.
That should work. Perfect.
All right. Here we go. It's the Let's Go Eat Show, as I probably already have introduced it. And our guest is Spencer J. Cox, the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Utah. It's not, we call it the Let's Go Eat Show, but we're not going to eat anything. Is that okay?
It's fine. I mean, I'm a little disappointed, but we'll have to get food another time.
Well, let's go. Maybe we should go out to lunch sometime and talk off the record. But I'm also trying to produce the show here with levels and all of that, so I hope it works out. I usually don't do this part of it.
If it doesn't, we'll do it again sometime.
All right. Now, Lieutenant Governor Cox, Spencer, I want to just start back who you are and where you came from. How many generations of your family go back in San Pete County?
All of them. I'm sixth generation, and my kids are seventh generation. On the same farm, my great-great-great-grandfather settled 160-plus years ago. Every line of mine traces back to pioneers that came to these valleys and were the first settlers in here. My great-great-great-grandfather was the first white settler male child born in the Salt Lake Valley to live to maturity, my great-great-grandfather. So we've been here, and they all ended up in San Pete County eventually. That's where,
little town of Fairview.
Fairview, yeah.
Where did they come from? 100, how many years? 160
years? So, they've been in San Pete for about 160 years.
Where did they come from?
They came from all over. Most of them came from the Massachusetts colonies. That's kind of where the Coxes especially settled in that area. Most of my ancestors harken back to England, very British. Some other European countries, a couple Scandinavian lines in there, but mostly British.
What kind of farmers were they? What did they do?
So the dairy farmers is where they started. And my dad sold the cows when I was young after my grandpa passed away at a fairly young age in his early 60s and left the farm there. We got rid of the cows, and so we've been raising alfalfa, oats, some barley on occasion ever since.
As the acreage that they had, has that shrunk over time a little bit?
No, it's grown a little bit. We've added some pieces there, but it's not a big farm. It was barely able for my dad and his family to survive on the farm. They were incredibly poor growing up, and it's more of a hobby now, a great place to raise kids and grandkids, a great place to lose money every year. We have about 150 acres that we
now,
farm.
Now, your dad didn't make his living solely on the farm.
No, he did not.
This is interesting to me. Was it your father who started this telecom?
No, it was actually my great-grandfather. So my father's grandfather, I can back up a little. In 1903, four farmers wanted telephone service, and the Ma Bell predecessor at the time would only bring it to Mount Pleasant, which was 6 miles away. So they got their wagons.
So you had to drive down to Mount Pleasant to use the phone.
To make a phone call. Oh, yeah. You had to take your horse and head down there. Mm-hmm. So they loaded up some poles and got some wire and brought telephone service, started the Fairview Telephone Company. In 1919, my great-grandfather bought that company, and it remained in the family. So then the family had the farm and the telephone company. When it was passed on to when my great grandfather died. He passed it on to two of his kids. My grandfather got the farm. His brother got the telephone company.
Well, guess who got screwed in that deal?
Yeah, we definitely got screwed in that deal. But
did they perceive it that way at all, or did they? Just
I don't
think
know.
It was good, or
I don't know. So at the time that it was perceived that way, it was the company didn't make money at all. It was almost bankrupt
into
the 80s. Yeah, a very small telephone company. So my dad and his cousin, it got passed on to my dad's cousin down that line. Mm-hmm. And my dad got hired there when his dad died. And at a young age, I was a baby, and he needed to try to make a living. And so the two of them kind of ran it together. Eventually, he gave my dad some ownership in the company, and they turned it into a great enterprise. Now over 100 employees that is driving fiber optics throughout the state. A lot of those new big buildings in Lehigh that you see are running on our fiber, which
That's
is
amazing.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah,
yeah,
for a small town.
I've been in Fairview. I've been in Fairview with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
The whole area, you know, and it's kind of. I don't think a lot of people really know what San Pete County is and Fairview and. What's the big next about Mount Pleasant?
Mount Pleasant, Ephraim, Manti. They know a little bit more. You know, the Manti pageant temple stuff.
But you know, and I've just had the opportunity to go there a few times because we've done some broadcasts at Snow College, and I was just blown away by how really beautiful and kind of still unspoiled it is.
Yeah, it's kind of the hidden gem in the state that people don't know about. I'm partly okay with that. We like it. A lot of people have compared it, especially the North San Pete area, is a lot like the Heber Valley. And what's interesting is it's close enough to the Wasatch Front that we keep expecting it to grow, much like Heber did 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I can beat a Provo in 35 minutes from my house. And so it's far enough away that we're away from that, but close enough that you can, you know, my wife can still go to the mall when she needs to.
What was it like growing up there then? I mean, you are a small town boy.
Yeah, very small.
Really
town.
Small.
1,200 people in Fairview, and you know, it's like any small town USA. It's small town Utah. It's kind of a pioneer town. Everybody was poor, and I mean that. I mean, you know, I grew up in a very very small house, and you know, it was always kind of touch and go. What the next year was going to be like. A lot of agriculture, a lot of mining. A lot of my friends.
Mining. I didn't know that.
They drive over to the mines in Emery and Carbon County and the power plants over there. So a lot of my friends' parents, the well-to-do people, were the coal miners in town. And then you had kind of the farmers. And, you know, when my dad was growing up, there were probably, you know, 10 dairy farms just in and around Fairview. Now there are none. Main Street, you've seen the movie Cars, the original movie. That's kind of the story of Fairview. Highway 89, Fairview was a bustling community when my dad was growing up. There were multiple stores, fronts, and a movie theater, and it was just exactly kind of Mayberry. And then when I-15 bypassed 89 and went through Nephi instead of through Fairview, the town kind of dried up. Mm-hmm. We don't have a grocery store in Fairview now. We have a couple gas stations, but I was in the 80s when I was growing up, that decline was slowly happening. So it was a little economically depressing time for the town, but nobody cared, nobody knew, because everybody was poor, and you made your own fun.
There are a lot of relatives. You have a lot of relatives.
I'm related to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of Coxes. And what was there another strain of the family there too?
There are a lot. So Coxes, Irons, Andersons, Benches, we're all kind of related.
I mean, this is kind of a weird question, but all Mormon stock.
Yes.
All Mormon pioneer stock.
Yeah.
The Mormon Church has had a hard time in recent years kind of hanging on to people sort of. Are there the branch parts of the family that are the beer drinking, cigarette smoking branch of the family that they don't do that? We're still Mormon, but we don't.
Absolutely. Know. Yeah. 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 I come.
You know that. What I'm talking
about. I know very well. In fact, what happened was, I'll tell you, it was really my family started much earlier on the Cox side. My great great-great-grandfather, the second generation, got swindled out of a horse kind of by a bishop in town. I mean, you know, this was over 100 years ago, and kind of left the church. And so more than half my cousins and a lot of extended cousins are not active in the church. They are the beer drinkers. There were six boys in my dad's family, and half of them went one way and half of them kind of went the other way. Yeah, and we love them. You know, two of them truck drivers.
You're still good. You're still very close. Big family reunions and the beer drinkers get together
with us and we have a great time. They're the fun side of the family. No question.
You know, and I think this contributes a lot and tells me a lot about your attitudes and how I sometimes think you're not really a Republican. that you're like
there's
a really
the death knell.
That you're really a very conservative Democrat. that's I kind of get that, but I think that's where that some of that comes from. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, no, I think I do, and I think you're talking about kind of the empathy side and the understanding of looking at the world a little differently. It comes from that for sure, from my family, my extended family. I'd also say a lot of comes from my parents got divorced when I was a kid, 10 years old.
That must have been hard.
And that was a tough time.
How many siblings you had?
So there were three of us, and my other two siblings also have some significant health problems. They had cystic fibrosis, which has been very tough for them. So, you know, had kind of those things going on. Both my parents got remarried, still live in Fairview, to married people who had children also. So suddenly I had step siblings and then both couples had children together. Mm-hmm. So now I have this really interesting family, and we're all seen as siblings. We're all incredibly close. We don't distinguish between, you know, the biological siblings and the step and half siblings. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that just gave me, you know, I learned that you could love people that aren't your flesh and blood, and that you can love them just as much as flesh and blood.
It's polygamy also in the family?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
A lot of that, of course.
On just about every branch. Yeah, right. I come through the first wife of one of the on the Cox side.
So how does a small town boy, I guess I can see that you've grew up in a kind of tolerance, and you grew up in a fairly modern age. You grew up in a modern age where, even though you were in a small town, you had exposure to the world.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah. I mean, we were still fairly sheltered growing up in the 80s. You know, I mean, the internet wasn't a thing yet. But yeah, we had TV and we got a Nintendo when that
So
that was
how,
a thing.
Why and where, why somewhere along the line did a young Spencer Cox say, I think I want to be a lawyer?
Well, no, that's something I'm still regretting, I think. But
why?
No. So interestingly enough, I'd always been attracted to politics. My dad was the mayor in our small town when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I had a little interest in that. I was a weird kid. For some reason, my parents subscribed to the newspaper, the Daily Herald, when I was like 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And it would come to my house every morning, and I had a hard time sleeping. I'd get up early. I was always the first one up, and I would read the paper every day, and just I loved kind of current events and got into that. And then I started dating my wife. We went to high school together. I started dating her before
Abby.
Yeah, before I went on a mission.
Well, she's a really lovely woman.
She's
too.
The best. She's amazing. But her grandfather was an attorney and a cool guy, a judge and an attorney, and he had been a mission president in Africa, and we just clicked immediately, and he lived next door to her.
You and her grandpa clicked.
Yeah, kind of strange, but and he was really the inspiration for me. I thought, man, I want to be like that.
She grew up in Fairview,
Mount Pleasant.
Oh, the big city.
The big city.
She's a big city girl.
She grew up outside of Mount Pleasant on a ranch, about 500 acres. So
you went to high school together.
We did. Yeah, went to high school together, and then I went to a year of Snow College. She's a year younger than me, and then I went to Mexico for 2 years
on a mission.
Yeah, came back, and
she really waited for you.
She really didn't.
What?
She dated a lot, and we wrote every week. And towards the end, the last couple months, the letters started to get sparse, and turned out she was very seriously dating a guy who wanted to marry her. And I got back, and she wasn't engaged yet, so I had a chance, and we duked it out. We battled, and for reasons still unknown, she ended up choosing me, and I'm grateful for it.
You felt did you feel that, just that awful desperation, like, I've got to do this. I've got to have this person. And
all of those feelings, all of that angst.
Awful, isn't it?
It's terrible. No, I could have written some really incredible music during that phase, I think. It was awful. But interestingly enough, she actually knew she had to make a decision. It's a funny story, but she made the decision. I didn't know this until after we were married. She called me to come up to her house. We sat down and talked. What I didn't know was she decided to break up with me and to marry the other guy. And I came up, and I was actually talking to her dad before she dropped the bomb on me. Mm-hmm. And we, for some reason, you know, I believe in deity, and it was inspired, but she just sat there and watched me talking to her dad and listened to the conversation, and something.
Were you pleading with her dad?
No, not at all. No. We were ironically, we were talking politics. It was the 96 election. I remember exactly what we were talking about. It was Gore v. Clinton, or not Gore v. Clinton, excuse me, it was Dole v. Clinton.
Dole.
It was Bob Dole versus Bob Bill Clinton. Dole. And obviously Gore was the vice president during that election. And so we were talking about that race, and for whatever reason, she changed her mind. Again, we had a great evening, didn't tell me anything about it, broke up with the guy the next day, and the rest is history.
Did you know the guy?
I did not know the guy, no, but he's a great guy. I've heard great things about him.
You sort of know him now.
I know about him. Yeah, we have a mutual friend.
Okay. So, it's not like she brings him up every
time. No. Fortunately, no.
Spencer, I could have.
I will say once in a while she does hold that over my head. But,
does your wife call you Spencer?
Yeah, Spencer. Yeah, Spencer, yeah. Spencer. My mom and my wife call me Spence.
I think when we were together, I think she called you Spencer when we went to lunch at
Das Cafe.
Yeah, what a great
in Spring
place.
City.
Spring City.
German place.
Man,
really
that's
incredible.
A great place.
Yeah.
So anyway, you decide to become a lawyer. And you're also somewhat of a rock musician. Were you doing that in high school?
No, actually. So I performed in a lot of, you know, musicals and some choral groups, things like that. I was Sky Masterson in Guys and Dolls and had a great time. But
luck be a lady tonight.
That's it. Yep. And always wanted to be in a band, but never did. That came a little later in life. That was my midlife crisis about 7 or 8 years ago, in my mid-30s. My brother and I started a band.
Still have the band?
Yeah, we do.
What's
we do.
Called?
We're not playing. Nearly enough. Upside, terrible name. We're looking for suggestions.
How about Downside?
Well, that's the reviews. Yeah. That's what we get.
So you decide to go into law. Let's see, you've gone on a mission. You've gone to a year of Snow College. Then where did you go?
Finished at Snow, went to Utah State.
Utah State.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and I think I read you went to Utah State. You didn't want to, but
Abby made me.
Your wife was going to go there.
Yeah, so, it's a good decision.
And you weren't married at that time.
We got, so she was at Utah State. I came back, finished my last, I needed one semester at Snow. We got married, and I started, you know, a week later.
You were doing pre-law there?
Political science.
With the intention of going. And then I read you got accepted into Harvard Law.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Not a lot of people get accepted
It was a really big deal, probably a bigger deal than I realized at the time. You know, and
did you get accepted? And also, they said we'll give you some money or
no money,
no
just,
money,
just
but
accepted.
You're accepted, and that's still a big. People will scrape up the money to do it.
I've yet to meet anybody other than me that said no to Harvard. I'm sure they're out there, but
you said no.
I said no.
And you went to
Washington and Lee in Virginia.
In Virginia,
yeah, yeah.
Why did you say no?
Well, so. There are a lot of ways to answer this. I mean, the easy way to answer it is that one, have you ever met anybody that went to Harvard Law School?
I live next door to someone.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I've met a couple of them. Yeah. You know, they're pretty proud of themselves, and that's great. That's great. They let you know. You don't have to ask if they
I'll tell you off the air who it is. You probably know him.
Okay. I probably do. I've just offended all of your Harvard
now,
Law grads
on,
listening to.
On the other side of me lives a woman who went to Harvard. in English, and she's a professor at University of Utah.
Oh, cool.
Harvard, but she went to study poetry and literature at Harvard.
Nice.
And she's just, you know, she's so disappointed that one of her daughters went to Yale. She just, she could have gone to Harvard, but no, she chose Yale.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, that was part of it. The bigger piece was the money piece. I mean, it was a really big deal. I knew if I went to Harvard, you know, I'd graduate with a couple hundred thousand dollars debt, which isn't a big deal because I could have easily gotten a job in New York or D.C., a big firm, and eventually paid that off. But we knew there was a chance we wanted to come back to Utah, and that kind of debt load would be tough. Washington and Lee was no slouch. They were ranked 18th in the country at the time, and they offered me a lot of money, and so that was helpful. We fell in love with Southern Virginia. It's about 3 hours south in the Shenandoah Valley, beautiful area, small town. Mm-hmm. It's Robert E. Lee and his horse are buried there. You know, a lot of history, kind of an interesting place, and we fell in love with it. I mean, the other piece is, you know, we're very religious. We prayed a lot about this and just felt like this was better for us, and we have zero regrets. It was a great experience. We loved our time there.
Just you and your wife, or had you had children?
So she was pregnant with our oldest when we went back there. He was born there, and then we had our second son there just before we came back. So two children born in Stonewall Jackson Memorial Hospital,
man. A
small hospital there. It's an interesting place.
You come back to Utah. What kind of law did you study?
So I was working for a big firm here when we came back. I actually clerked for Judge Ted Stewart, federal district court judge, and then went to work for Fabian and Clendenin at the time, now Fabian Vancott, about 50 attorneys, which is decent size for Utah, and was doing a lot of corporate kind of defense work, employment law, some different, doing a little bit of special education law. My wife has her degree in special education, and that firm represented some school districts, and so kind of for fun, I got involved there, enjoyed that, but mostly representing, you know, big companies that
not much trial stuff. Just
I was doing litigation.
Oh, you
work.
Were a litigator.
Yeah, I was a litigator. So not transactional. I wasn't doing business deals. But when these companies got sued, you know, we defended them, and that's.
Did you like that? Were you a good litigator?
Loved it. I loved it. And I think I was good. You know, I was only there for a couple of years, and so you're working with some great attorneys and getting your feet wet, learning the ropes. I think they thought I was a good attorney. I was on a fast track to partner and really enjoyed it, loved it. But also we were just having our third child then, our third son, and I had three boys on a quarter acre in Kaysville. Both my wife and I had grown up on hundreds of acres in rural Utah, and just something just didn't feel right.
You weren't living in Fairview then. You were living in Kaysville.
We were living in Kaysville.
And you were working here in Salt
Downtown,
Lake.
Downtown. Yep, yeah. on Second South.
And just so
State
what
Street.
So you did you just quit and say, that's it, I'm going back to Fairview?
So what happened was, about that time, she'd just given birth to our third son, and my dad called me and said, "Hey, I'm not going to be in the business forever. We'd love you to come back and help manage." They'd actually sold the company.
The telecom
to a holding company out in New York. But part of the deal was they kept management in the family, and that was important. And he said, come back next 10 years. You know, eventually I'll retire. He'll come back as vice president, general counsel. We're big enough now; we could use some legal advice in house, but you won't be doing just legal work. That'll just be part of it. You do HR, business development, anything you want to do to help run the company and raise your kids here on the farm. Take a big cut in pay.
I'd be really?
Making about,
I mean, a big
yeah, about 50% or more of what I was making, and especially what I would be making, the track I was on. But it was interesting. We were seeing a bumper sticker and said that it's 99% of attorneys that give the other 1% a bad name. And Abby explained the joke to me, and then I remember asking her this question: Is the world a better place because of what I'm doing? And she said, absolutely not. And that's not to say that attorneys can't make the world a better place.
Sure, there are really
great people.
You know, I think attorneys get a really bad rap.
They
in
do.
A lot of ways.
There are
when you need one.
Yeah.
If you have a good one, you will worship the ground he walks on or she walks on.
And you know many of those. Yeah. We have a mutual, Ed Brass.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
great guy. Just
absolutely. Just, yep. There couldn't be a better. Really a better human being on the planet.
Yep.
And he does the really hard attorney work.
Yeah, he does. He does. He does indeed. But that, so that joke kind of led to a deeper discussion. And again, you know, after a lot of thought and prayer, we made the leap and moved back to Fairview. And it, again, a decision neither of us regret. It was hard. And when we saw the success that, you know, our friends that were attorneys with the firm were having, you kind of wonder a little bit. But being able to raise our kids on the farm and to have kind of the life that we had growing up has been just a tremendous blessing to our family.
You know, you talk about praying and a lot and blessing a lot, and I mean, you really are religious.
Yeah, I mean,
I like the way you kind of go. Yeah,
I mean, I
like you're kind of like, yeah, I'm ashamed to admit it, but
No, I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. But I also don't want to be kind of in your face with it.
Well, you never have been.
Well, it's just when you ask me these questions about kind of personal decisions, like I can't divorce that because, I had these moments where. It didn't make sense on paper, right? You don't go back to Fairview. You don't go there.
It's a stupid idea.
It's really, yeah. You don't tell Harvard no. Yeah. That's kind of dumb. But we really felt like divinely, like this was what our family was supposed to do. And I think that's important. Whether you believe in God or not, I've been reading too much Brené Brown recently. But this concept that the universe is conspiring in your favor somehow, whether it's karma or whatever it is, the good things happen to good people. I mean, not all the time, but if that belief is important to how we function as human beings. Mm-hmm. And so I would be remiss if I didn't at least honestly tell you why we made these crazy, dumb decisions.
Well, it's worked out, except now you're in Salt.
Has it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it worked out. I mean, you have become sort of you've become more successful.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But it also has the downside because now you're working back in Salt Lake and you have a 200 mile round trip commute.
Yeah.
And you try when you're up here as lieutenant governor in Salt Lake, you stay here for a day or two. You don't go back every day.
I go back every day. Yeah.
You do go back every day.
I do go back every day. Yeah. Yeah. During the session. So for that 45 days, you know, January through March, I will stay up one night a week.
Only
one night a week. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're here in Salt Lake right now. You're going to drive 100 miles home later today.
I drove 100 miles up this morning. Tonight at about 7 o'clock, I'll drive 100 miles
back.
I'll get home about 8:30 tonight. Yeah.
And then tomorrow you will get up. Yeah. And do it again.
Do it all again. Yeah.
That's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of crazy.
Is it sustainable?
Well, I've done it for almost 4 years now. So, sure. It's sustainable. Look, this job has a shelf life. For sure.
Lieutenant governor
has a shelf life. Yeah. I mean, I know for sure that I've got 3.5 years left at most as lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. The last lieutenant governor made it a little over 4 years, and then he moved on.
You replaced him.
Greg Bell.
Yeah, yep. And he left to do something in education.
Right? He's actually the head of the hospital association.
Oh, hospital. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the hospital association.
And you were appointed by Gary Herbert.
Correct.
To replace him.
Correct. Right. Yes. Gary Herbert was the lieutenant governor for 4.5 years,
and then
he became the governor. And Olene Walker's kind of the exception to that. She's the only one that's done it for a long time. But you know, whoever the next governor is, if it's not me, they're not going to want me to be the lieutenant governor. So I can see an end, you know, for
the
sure.
The lieutenant governor really isn't an elected position, is it,
Utah? It's a quasi-elected position, like the vice president. We're elected on the same ticket. Yeah. So the theory is you're voting for the team. Mm-hmm. You're voting for the governor and the lieutenant governor, and that's why we have a succession plan. The idea is you're also voting for the next guy if something happens to this guy, and that's
now the next governor, if it's not me, what does that?
Well,
I mean, does that mean that you might be the next governor?
Well, yeah, I mean. there is a every day there's a chance, you know, that,
oh,
that you
I
could
see what
be,
you mean.
Be yeah. the governor.
You know, Gary Herbert might say, I just got a job offer that I can't turn down.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there are lots of scenarios.
Are you
going to
run for governor?
That's the question. And
that would be 2020?
2020. Yeah, 2020. So it's way too early to be talking about that. Unfortunately, several candidates started talking about it a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Josh Romney and Jason Chaffetz basically announced that they were running for governor a year and a half ago, which is just crazy to me. One of the things I hate most about our political system, I mean, think about this. The UK had an entire election just in the time it took for the Georgia 6th special district between their primary and general election. We run these elections for 4 years now, 5 years for a governor's election. It's really messed up. And so to say we're not thinking about it would not be accurate. I mean, of course we're thinking about it. People ask us all the time. And so you have to have the conversation. We have not made a decision yet. But if we'll go through the same.
And when you say we, you're not using the royal we. You mean you and your lovely wife.
And Abby.
And your heavenly father, probably.
We will use the same process we've always used. Yeah. And, you know, and I, with one caveat, if I run, I think that means God wants me to run. It does not mean God wants me to win. If any politician ever tells you that, you know, God wants them to be
God
the next governor,
my side.
Yeah, you should probably not support that person. I don't believe that. I believe, again, that there's a path for all of us. It doesn't mean you learn a lot from losing in these races. And I'm one of those guys that will tell you I have a much better life outside of this. I mean, telling the governor yes to be lieutenant governor was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. We were within 5 minutes of saying no to the governor on this one, you know, and which was crazy because you never say no to a position like this. But I'm not, I don't need this. I don't. I do it because I want to give back and I think I can make a difference. And the minute I stop thinking that, I'm gone. I'm out.
And that's why you've done, I mean, you've been on, you're on city council in Fairview, county commission.
Yeah, I was the mayor too of Fairview.
Oh, you were also the mayor.
Yeah.
You're a state legislator.
Yes, for 9 months. I was a freshman.
And now lieutenant governor. Are there any of those that you liked better than?
First of all, I'm sitting in Fairview. A friend comes to me and says, hey, there's a vacancy on the city council. We need to fill it. It wasn't an election. We've talked about it. We want you to be it. I was flattered. Why? And he said, well, the truth is we have a lot of legal problems in Fairview and we can't afford an attorney.
You're
so
a
that's
lawyer.
That's how I got started in all of this, was doing free legal work for Fairview. Mm-hmm. And at every step, you know, I've seen issues that I thought I had the skill set to help fix because there aren't a lot of attorneys in Tampa County and to be able to help with some of those issues. So I loved it. I loved the House of Representatives. I got elected. I was a freshman. I was only there for 9 months when the governor asked me to be the lieutenant governor. A shock to all of us. But that there's something about that 45 days, the intense, you're making decisions so quickly. It's all coming at you, 500 bills in such a short amount of time. And you're working with people and trying to build coalitions, which I think we've lost at the national level. But convincing people that your position is right is a skill set that has been lost amongst people that should have it the most in Congress and other places. And I loved it. You know, maybe I love it more because it was only 9 months. And, you know, mm-hmm. looking back on it, I may not have loved it if I'd been there that long. But it was a really cool experience.
Lieutenant governor is what in a way it's a kind of a. I probably don't understand the position as well as I should, but in a way it seems sort of thankless.
That's an excellent way, I think, to describe it.
I mean, you are in charge of the
elections
process.
Yes.
And other than that, it seems to me like the governor says, you know, I can't be in two places at once, so you go do that.
Yeah. Well, and it's always the thing he didn't want to do, right?
Sure.
I did tell you that.
First dibs.
That's right. So, yeah, it's, look, I am – blessed and so lucky to be able to travel the state, to have conversations like this. I would never have had this opportunity to get to know you if I hadn't been in this position and others.
Well, you should interview me sometime.
I should. I absolutely should. That would be fun.
I know you like I know you like communication and
I do.
And that, yeah. And there are, you've been on the radio and done some interviewing.
And we've kicked around doing some podcasts, which I think would be fun.
Yeah. But
and you would be on the list for sure. But this is cool, right? So all of that being said, and the governor will tell you this, I'm lucky because I have a governor who was a lieutenant governor. So he knows how thankless it can be, and he works really hard to not make it as awful as it could be. So I'm the luckiest lieutenant governor in the country.
I had the feeling that with John Huntsman said at some point, who's my lieutenant governor again? Well, it's Herbert? Okay.
They had a lot of respect for each other. I think, a little bit of a political marriage. You had kind of the Utah County guy that Huntsman needed, and they are still close. They still talk, and it's great. But the governor, he didn't pick me to pick up, votes in Fairview.
Right.
It was not a political decision for him at all, because I don't bring anything to the table, right? I'm not, I'm just a...
No big voting block.
No, I don't bring a voting block. I mean, I guess the white Mormon block, but I think you had that locked up.
I don't think Gary Herbert needed that.
No, I hope your listeners recognize that as a joke.
Yes,
so it's been great because he wanted a teammate, and I think there is an age difference there. I'm the age of his kids. And so there is a little bit of a difference, I guess, there. But we have a lot of fun together.
He's a sweet guy.
He is.
I just not off base there?
You're
at
not
all
off base
slightest.
At all.
You know,
no.
Whatever I may think of his politics, when I just talk to him face to face, and I can get him off the, sometimes he'll. And it's just the same thing with every politician.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you get onto certain sort of talking points.
Yep.
And if you get him off of that and just start talking about stuff. He's just a sweet, nice guy.
It's where he is the best. I mean, when kind of the retail politics, when he's just one-on-one with people, I mean, people walk away going, oh my gosh, I love this guy. And that's been the best part of this job. I said all that just to say this, when you talked about being a thankless job. So part of this is, sometimes the governor and I don't agree on everything, and he's okay with that. But there are times when once he's made a decision, then it's my decision too.
You have to
And I go out there, and it's so much easier when you know the guy's making the decision for the right reasons, even if you disagree with it. So I know that may sound strange to some of your listeners, but when you can disagree with somebody if you know their heart's in the right place, it's a lot easier to defend. When you know they're doing it for just crass political reasons or to benefit themselves, for selfish reasons, it's a lot harder to stand up for that. And so I just feel lucky to be able to work with this governor.
Yeah. Did the Russians collude in our elections here in Utah? You're in charge of them.
Did they not
collude, but meddle? Did they meddle in?
No,
more and more has come out. More states have said, there does seem to be some evidence that they tried something.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say.
And how do you examine? Because you're in charge. Did you have to examine that?
We do. Yeah, we do. And we look into that very carefully. We work with the state's IT section. And our state is one of the states that gets attacked more than other states. And we're not exactly sure why that is. We think there's some reason.
In
general.
Just people trying to hack
constantly.
In
And we're now, we'll get 300 or 400 million attempts a day to hack into our system. Part of that is probably because of Hill Air Force Base located here in the state. Part of that is probably because we have an NSA data center here in the state. But we have I think better communications with our federal counterparts than maybe some other states do, because we've had some high profile breaches in the past years. Not recently, but you'll remember there was a couple database breaches, 5-6 years ago, and that got people's attention. And so from that time, we took it more seriously than other states, and we've been very careful. So there's no doubt in my mind that the Russians tried to compromise our systems over time. But I am very confident that none of that happened.
What do you make of that the Russians have tried to meddle in elections here in this country, and they've done it by going to various states. And I think, what did I hear, 36 states say there may be some evidence that
there was a report, I think, in the Washington Post or the New York Times of that. Talking to our counterparts, we think that's high. We don't think that that's accurate.
Why are they doing this?
I think it's very simple. It's economic. And the Russian economy is a shambles. And the only thing they have going for them is natural gas. And the United States have started producing a lot more natural gas. We found other places across the world that can do that. And so they've got nothing. And so they're trying to regain some sort of influence globally. And the way to do that is to meddle. It's really all they have left.
Because they do it in Europe, too.
They do it all over. Yeah. And have for a long time. It's getting more sophisticated, obviously, as we become a more technologically advanced society, the possibility of doing that. But it also speaks to the brilliance of our elections. Instead of having a federal election where everything is centered, this is one area where I think Democrats agree that local control is better, because we don't even run state elections. We have 29 county elections, individual. And it's so much harder to hack an election when it's run at 2,000 counties across the mm-hmm. United States. Yeah. It makes it much, much more difficult. And while you could have some one-offs and things like that, it's much more secure. And we feel confident here in the state of Utah.
Mm-hmm. Let's start. Just what do you make of, we've talked a little bit about it, not being able to get along on a national level. We see some of that here on a local level. Why have we come to this point where Republicans and Democrats cannot seem to agree on anything, and the level of rancor and bitterness and meanness has risen?
I'm not sure I have time to completely answer this question, but I have some strong thoughts, because I've been a little outspoken on the need for it to end. And some Pew data came out. Pew Research did some data this past week that shows that it's not just, it always seems worse in the moment. Historically, we look back and maybe it's not as bad as it was. No, it's as bad as we think. We are more polarized than ever on the fringes, on the extremes. I think there are a couple things that weigh into that. One is how we elect people. Fewer and fewer people are participating in the process. And what that leads to then is if only the extremes are participating, part of that has to do, with the way we're elected. Part of that has to do with voter turnout. And when you have politicians who only care about getting reelected, if that's your only job is to get reelected, then you look at this very scientifically. If I have to get reelected, these are the people voting and they're on the fringes, then I have to do things that make them happy. And what makes them happy is me not talking to my counterparts on the other side.
When only the extreme are the people who vote, then they elect extremists.
Exactly. That's the bottom line. Or people who were not extremists become more extreme because they're trying to get those votes over time. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that has to do with longevity, too. So a second issue is how long we serve. I don't think that these positions were meant to be lifetime callings. I just don't. I mean, you go back and read everything the founders talked about and wrote about, and it was, George Washington, the gentleman farmer, get in, get out, move on, do something else.
Serve your time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think those two things combined are part of it. And then the social media culture that we have, the disruption that's happened in media, the disruption that's happened in newspapers, books, all of those things that now allow me to only hear and read news or information, or have friends that see the world the way that I do. I never have to hear an opposing opinion. And media as revenue generator, the same thing that's happening to politicians is happening to some on the far right and the far left, who realize that they can make a lot of money by whipping people into a frenzy and throwing out stuff that may or may not be true. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a toxic combination, those three.
I'll have people say to me, I'll be listening to Sean Hannity on the radio or something. So how can you listen to that?
Yeah.
And I say, I listen to it. I don't agree with almost anything he says,
right.
But I really should know what he's saying.
Yes,
know what's going on.
And it makes it possible for somebody like you and I, who have different political leanings and backgrounds, to have a really nice conversation and enjoy each other's company and you know, battle on a couple issues now and then, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's just you are a human being, and you don't let your political ideology get in the way of that. Which I think is just great. Yeah, I mean, you're really good friends with a Democrat, Ben McAdams,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You guys are
are
quite good friends, aren't you?
Yep.
How'd you meet him, or just through politics?
It was actually through politics, because he left the legislature when I came in, and so we missed it. But I remember a bunch of Republicans saying, "Oh, you would have loved Ben McAdams when he was here in the legislature. The guy was great. You know, he was very reasonable. We could talk to him. Sometimes he voted with us on things, and just a good guy." And so I got an opportunity early on to be at a couple events with him, and just started talking to him. And we realized we had so much in common. We both have 4 kids. We're both attorneys. You know, we're the same age. He's like 6 months older than me, and he, you know, we agreed on some issues, and that's kind of where it started. And then he invited me to come and participate in the demolition derby with him, and which was a terrible mistake. I almost died, and we had a lot of fun, and so we get along great.
He's I talked to him the other day, and I said, he's such a nice guy, and I said, How do you really like being county mayor? And he said, "Oh, I love it." And I said, "But people are up your butt all the time." All the time they're on you about stuff. And, you know, especially those homeless shelter issues and all that.
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, well, that's part of the job, and I even like that part of it, because I think I talk to them and I hope we can work things out." And
that's the thing. If you feel like you're making a difference, then it's still worth it. It does get hard at times, and I know he's had some long nights and some rough moments, and that's part of the job. But the sad thing is, I've shared this before, but when we almost told the governor no, and my wife looked at me and said, "That's the problem." She said, "The problem is that the people that should be doing these jobs aren't doing them, because they're kind of awful. And the people that really want to do these jobs shouldn't be there. And so if you say no, then you can't, you know, you can't criticize anybody else. You've got to step up and do it." And so we have this deal that as soon as I start really, really liking this job and just can't get enough of it, that's when it's time to be done. So.
Your wife is a really remarkable person, I think. And I've only been around her, I guess, just that one time.
She's been here a couple times.
But when we had lunch, and she was just so charming, and she's lovely to look at, and kind, and all of those things.
Thank you.
And I saw this item, and I've always wanted to ask you about it.
Okay.
And it kind of surprised me that she served as a surrogate mother. Is that how you put it? So she had a baby for your sister.
For my sister, for her sister-in-law.
Yeah. And I read about that, and I thought, well, that seems really a liberal thing to do. That's what liberals do for each other, not conservatives. They go, "What? How? What? No." You know what I'm saying? It was talk about that whole thing. If you
will. So I mentioned my sister has cystic fibrosis, and she was lucky. She was able to give birth to a little girl, and we almost lost my sister in the process. She almost died. I mean, it was scary time, and she knew, you know, that was kind of it. She would never be able to have another kid. And she, again, you know, bringing in the religious side a little bit, just started having this feeling like she was supposed to have another child. I was actually her bishop at the time. I was an LDS bishop in our small town, and I kept telling her you didn't have enough to do, nothing else to do. I was the mayor at the time too. So as mayor, I would shut off people's power, and as bishop, I'd go pay to turn it back on. So yeah, that was worked out well. But I digress. So after that, we started having this conversation. And my wife started having these kind of feelings that she was supposed to do something for my sister. And we read an article in the Salt Lake Tribune about a couple who had done this. And we actually had a mutual friend, and they were able to talk to her. And things just happened, and my wife felt strongly like this is what she was supposed to do. So different than a surrogate, this my sister is fertile, and her husband. So so this child is all theirs. So we call this is a gestational carrier is the official term. Abby, my wife, just served as the oven,
an incubator.
So, incubator. Yeah. Yep. They put a fertilized egg from my sister and her husband into my wife, and she had that baby for her, and it was incredible. We didn't know. We were really nervous about how small religious community, right?
This was kind of an outlandish thing, isn't it?
Very much so. And to a person, it was met with the humanity and love that I felt it deserved. You know, I had this kind of weird. I'm kind of the fifth wheel in all of this. You know, I don't participate in any way in this.
Just have
process.
Your hands in your pockets.
That's right.
Well,
here we go.
I love my sister and I love my wife.
Yeah, and this is cool. But the interesting part, I mean, during the and that's amazing. But it was a rough pregnancy, and she never had any problems with our four children. But she did. There were some complications. She was on bed rest for a long time, and then the baby ended up coming significantly early, about 5 weeks, I think, 5 or 6 mm-hmm. weeks early, and weighed about 4 pounds, and was in the NICU for a long time. So it was a really trying time for her. And then, you know, we don't talk a lot about it publicly, but just the emotional trauma too of having a baby and then giving it to
someone else. I've never quite. I guess there are women who just can have babies and they just do it. And but I think the emotional thing must have been.
Well,
that would be hard.
And if you know my wife, this is not. You mentioned those people that, oh yeah, I'll have a baby for you. That kind of they can just have babies and it's not a big deal. My sister had people like that, friends, great people who I'm sure were very sincere. Talk about that. My wife is not that person. She's kind of an intensely private person, and this was a really hard thing for her. But again, she felt like this is what she was supposed to do, and it's been incredible for our family. He's now 6 years old, and he's a great kid. Yeah, just finished kindergarten, and he is energetic and amazing, and he's a little miracle, and it's brought our families closer.
And does he know about it really? Or?
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. He does. We've talked. I mean, the hard conversation was, how do you tell your kids this, right? And we had young kids at the time. I mean, my oldest and maybe. Yeah, just my oldest had kind of knew the birds and the bees, you know, and how this all works. My younger ones didn't, and so we explained it to them. Look, the doctor's going to take the baby out of Emily's tummy and put it in Abby's tummy, and they, you know, that made sense in their minds.
Oh, okay.
They just, you know, they're like, okay, because Emily gets sick, so doctors can do this stuff and put the baby in there, and he knows that we have a lot of fun, and he calls he just tells his friend, yeah, I was in Aunt Abby's tummy, and that's kind of how he talks about it.
You know, you come across as such a Boy Scout and such a nice guy and all of that, but I just discovered something about you. There is a Twitter feed that, and it's you, isn't it? Snarky.
Oh, no, it's not me.
That is
not me. No, no, no.
I thought maybe it was, and I thought, that's hilarious.
No, it's not me.
Snarky Spencer Cox.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's been around for maybe a couple years.
I just saw it the other day, and I just read through it briefly, and there was nothing really horrible about
no,
it.
No, he's been pretty good.
Whoever does it does it with it in a. Do you know who does it?
I didn't for the longest time. I did figure it out maybe 6 months ago, maybe a little while ago. It's an attorney, somebody I didn't know. I'd met
really?
Once. Yeah, yeah, I had no idea. Somebody else kind of pieced it together and figured out who he was. And so he's been good not to not to be too awful with it. But yeah, I guess I guess I'm flattered to have a parody account of some sort.
I mean, and it's. And it's just kind of, I thought maybe it was you.
Yeah, no.
Here's a way I can just kind of let this other side of me kind of leak out a little.
I have a treasure trove of deleted tweets or non-published tweets, draft tweets that are very snarky and show the other side of me that I probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, because you must get pissed at, you must get angry at stuff, but it just doesn't show in your demeanor.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it happens. And some people have seen it. And sometimes you have to. I mean, it's part of the job. Sometimes you have to bring the hammer down and,
in
it's
politics,
ugly,
you do have to get angry
you
sometimes.
Do. Yeah, but I try really hard.
I could never do it because I'd be angry all the time. I could just be angry all the time.
There are some politicians that are angry all the time.
I know. So. We won't talk about Mike Noel. We will not talk about Mike Noel. My face would get redder than his if I were a politician.
I love Mike. He was my mentor for my 9 months in the House. You get assigned a mentor,
really?
It was Mike, and I thought, wow, we're both crazy. So
I've done a couple of panels that he's been on the panel.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get him to go, say, hey, wait, no, calm down, and you start talking to him. He's a pretty nice guy.
He's a really nice guy. But he's a really bright guy, too.
Now, Mike, just hang on for a second. You
know? He does come out. He leads with the flamethrower. Yeah. I mean, that's just his persona.
He does. I think we can kind of wrap things up here. I would like to see you run for more political office.
And, well, thank
and
you.
And I think you know, when the last governor's race, for instance— You know, there. I'm a. You know how liberal I am.
Yes, I do.
I mean, I'm an exceptionally liberal person.
Yeah.
But when I looked at the governor's race, and I thought, and I hate to say it because the Democrat who ran, and I can't even think of his name right now, ran against Gary Herbert.
Yeah.
From the healthcare. Mike.
It'll come to me.
He was a nice guy. But I thought, you know, and I would rather have Gary Herbert run in the state right now.
Well, wow. Thank you.
I'm a liberal.
You are.
Democrat.
Incredibly. Yeah. Weinholz. Mike Weinholz.
Yeah.
Mike is a great guy.
A really nice guy and a smart guy.
I didn't know him before the race. Got to know him a little bit during it.
And I know his wife, too, and she'll probably be pissed if she hears me say that, but... but she's a really great person too. But I just thought, and when compared to Jonathan Johnson, I mean, there's just no doubt Gary Herbert is a good steward for the state of Utah, even though his decisions on land use, the Bears ears stuff, you guys stop it, just stop it. Let the people have the Bears ears.
I know how you feel, and I know a lot of people are really passionate about that. But again, so here's the thing. Look, this exactly what you just said is what we need more of. Like, I can hate this decision. I can hate everything about it. But I can also separate that from some of the other good things that are happening. And you and I have talked about, you know, when the governor stood up for refugees, when no other Republican governor would, you know, again, his heart's in a good place. And we can have disagreements without being complete jerks to each other.
I mean, Gary Herbert and I had a conversation a long time ago about gay marriage.
Yeah.
And I said to him, how will you feel when gay marriage becomes the law of the land? And he said, well, I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
And I said, I think, Governor, you're on the wrong side of history here. And I was right. And he said, well, if it happens, then I'll enforce the law of the land. And if it happens, then that's the decision I'll live with.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's how politics should be.
It is. And to his credit, I'll just add this. Even when you disagree with them, he will talk to you and he will listen to you. And I can't tell you how many meetings he had with Equality Utah and Jim DeBacchus, mm-hmm. and they came and talked through these issues. And just the fact that he would do that, bring them in and give them a voice and let them, you know, let them share what they believe. It makes a difference.
So no snarky. Okay. Oh, and one other thing. I know you love sports, right?
I do, yes.
Sports and sports broadcasting.
Yeah.
And sports talk shows and all that.
Yeah.
So I think I suggested to you that you listen to this guy, Mike Pesca.
Yes.
The Gist.
Yes.
Have you listened to that?
I haven't yet. I need to. I know I need to.
Now, he doesn't talk. He's a really good sports guy.
Yeah.
You may know him as a sports guy. The Gist is more political stuff, which I think you'll really like. But what are
which
you listening
I do love.
To?
So I am listening to – so I do books on tape. I'm doing a book on every president in order, which was a terrible idea because there are some terrible presidents and some terrible biographies. Mm-hmm. But I just finished Teddy Roosevelt, the trilogy, which was amazing. And so doing that, I'm listening to a book on Genghis Khan, and it's really fascinating right now. And then I'm listening to Ben Sasse's book on the vanishing American adult, which I highly recommend. Fascinating. amazing book. And then I'm doing a lot of podcasts right now. It's NBA, the draft, and there are a lot of trades going on right now. So that's kind of
you love
consuming
that stuff,
right now.
Huh?
Yeah, big Utah Jazz fan, big NBA guy. That's probably my favorite.
Are the Jazz going to – will they break up? Because I heard somebody say – and I'm not huge into sports.
Yeah.
But I heard some commentators say if – oh, no, you know, was it Kevin Durant? It was Kevin Durant who said – the Jazz gave us more trouble than almost any team.
He did. I listened to that podcast.
And he said if that team stays together, they will be a force to be reckoned with.
He did. And so that's the question right now. Does Gordon Hayward stay or does he go? And we're all kind of sitting on pins and needles waiting for that decision. But I think he stays. I think he likes it here.
Wouldn't you like to be Gordon Hayward at that point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much do you want to give me?
This is it. Yeah.
What do you want to give me?
He gets the max deal. Yeah. He just does. And they're, you know, people are putting up billboards trying to convince him to stay, and it's fun. It's one of the things that unites us. You know, we're the University of Utah versus BYU, and there's a lot of animosity there, but the Jazz kind of bring us all together.
And what sports podcast do you listen to?
So I'm listening to the Vertical, which is the Woj podcast, and then all the Bill Simmons stuff, the sports guy. The Bill Simmons, he's one of my favorites, and Cousin Sal and the team, they've got some good stuff going. They actually have a betting podcast now, which is kind of fun. I'm not, you know, I'm not.
You're not a gambler.
I'm not a gambler, but it's kind of fascinating to see how that works.
At your recommendation, I have listened to some of the Bill Simmons stuff. So you need to listen to Mike.
I will.
It's only a half an hour,
which is perfect for
the gist.
Mike
Pesca. He's okay. Very smart.
I'm on it.
Thanks, Bill. I think we've done it.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come and hang out.
Yeah, I think so. Now, when you do your own podcast.
Yeah, you're on. Okay. Absolutely.
It's Lieutenant Governor Spencer J.
James.
James.
Yeah.
Spencer James Cox. Thanks for being with us on the Let's Go Eat Show. My best to your wife, Abby. I think that's it.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. I'm Bill Allred. Remember, if you're pouring drinks, always make mine a double.